You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Rebeller Sports.
4 seconds left.
Everybody, and welcome back to RBLR Lightning. As always, my name is Jake Wicker. Alongside me, it's Joe Zamataro, it's Matt Gannon. Guys, welcome back to the show. I wish this was going to be a happier episode, but holy cow, it's been a wild week for the Lightning. Not the way we'd have hoped this season would have started. It's been a rough week, but we are here live to break it all down. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out what's going on with this team, because I sure don't know what the heck is going on. Before we get into everything, first and foremost, guys, how you doing today?
I spent the last week in San Francisco.
Nice.
And I caught the games, which was one of those things where, you know, you're like, you're supposed to be on vacation, but you're just kind of putting yourself through misery. You know, I think the show's just going to go off the rails. I have a feeling that's the way this one's headed. Matt, how you doing, man?
You know, I've been better. I've been worse. I'm just hoping the other Tampa Bay team has a better fairing against the other Detroit team this Monday than what we saw on, Thursday? So I'm all right, though. It should be a fun show for you guys.
Yeah, we got the Bucks as of this. We are live right now here on a Monday. They're playing at what time is it? 7 p.m. So won't keep it too long. I know everybody in Tampa Bay wants to watch the Buccaneers. They're having a great season to start here in the NFL. By the way, comments section. I see everybody's saying a whole bunch of things. We appreciate everybody joining us live. Don't forget, drop your comments down below. We'd love to hear what you guys have to think. We'll get to all those in just a little bit here for sure. And if you're not with us live, don't forget to follow us on social media at RBLR Sports, at RBLR Lightning. Ring that bell of notifications, all that good fun stuff. Subscribe on the YouTube channel so you do know when we go live.
All right, Jake, I hear there's breaking news.
There is breaking news, Joe. I'm glad you brought it up because literally as we were going through the countdown, we got the announcement that Connor Dickey has been sent down to the Syracuse Crunch and called up in his place. I'm not even going to try, to be honest with you. It is defenseman. Oh, actually, I'm going to try here. Charlie Edward Astros. I hope I did that somewhat right. But so Connor Dickey sent down and the Lightning have called up a defenseman. And yeah, wow. I don't know if I saw this coming this soon. Listen, we saw Dickey get sent down last year and he spent some time in the NHL to try and get better. He was back with the team at the start of the season, but now back to the Syracuse Crunch.
Joe, I hate to admit it, you were right. I mean, in the preseason, like I liked what I saw from him, but I think I was wearing some rose-colored glasses there, and there were some glaring weaknesses in his game in the preseason that we saw, and even bits and pieces of last year. Like he got sent down for a good time, and when he got called back up, he was great. Hopefully it's another situation like that, but throughout, what, 6 or 7 games so far, it just has not worked out for him. He's been, you know, overtly not that great. And, you know, there's no one play or point that I can point out in particular where he, you know, could be better, could improve, but there's just not a lot going for him right now. So it's not a shocking decision at all.
Yeah. And, you know, there's those things I was trying to point out during the preseason with his game, those little lack of, you know, some of the defensive play. Defensively, he hasn't honestly been too horrible. He's, you know, a dead even plus minus, but he just hasn't been a factor in a lot of the games. He's got one assist over the course of the 6 games he's played, total of 5 shots on net. He just hasn't been able to really establish himself. And I honestly do like the idea of him going down and getting more top line minutes, develop his game a little bit more. And with the team around him that he has right now, I don't even know if they're setting a good example for his development. So I think that, you know, the best thing is for him to go to right now a smoking hot minor league team and really work on his game.
Yeah, you know, I think it is the right move because you're right, Joe. Unfortunately, this team right now is not playing good at all. Nobody is setting a good example. Geeky hasn't been the best either. The only thing that gets to me a little bit here with the frustration-wise is, you know, this is the second time now Geeky's had to been sent down, and why do we keep trying this process of throwing him back and forth? I mean, let's just leave him down in the AHL until he's ready. I know they're trying to get him a shot.
That's part of the process, right? That's part of the process. Yeah. Is you give guys a chance when you think that they look good enough for it. And it hasn't been that long that we've been, you know, that he's been up and down. It's not like it's not like an ABB sort of thing. It's really, I don't think, even close to the same.
No, not an ABB.
But Beverly's comment got me laughing. You got to put that one up.
Beverly said maybe Cooch can go down. We'll get to it. Listen, there's been a lot of players that have been bad. I know people are very frustrated with Nikita Kucherov. I've been frustrated with this entire team. So let's send everybody down at this rate. So Geeky sent down. Hopefully he's going to, like you said, Joe, he's playing with a really hot Syracuse team now. He can continue to develop. And then when he does get called up again, if I remember correctly, when he got called up at the end of last year, did he get called up at the end of last year or was it somebody
else? Yeah. No, he got sent down and called back up, and he was
really good when he came back.
Really good. Oh yeah. Yeah, and the same thing happened with Gonsalves. He was kind of a non-factor in the start of the year, and then he gets sent down for like a couple months, like 2 months or something like that, and then he comes back and turns into the Gage Gonsalves that we know and still kind of waiting on this year. But hopefully it's the same thing again as last year. I mean, I hope you don't have to repeat this vicious cycle of up down, and you know he turns out better when he comes back up. But still, I hope we don't have to keep doing this.
Quick comment here from Daniel as well. Said, could the Geeky move just be about cap? I don't think so. The Lightning have a pretty decent amount of cap space. When I say decent amount of cap space, in comparison in years past, they have a decent amount of cap space. So I think this is definitely about just the way this team has been going and him purely working in through his development and trying to get better.
And another thing too is I'm not sure what his timetable is, but this could mean Zemgis Girgensons has a return. I know it's not a very shiny name or anything, but a useful bottom six guy. He had a really good preseason too. He had a multi-goal game. Nobody had that on their bingo card. So it could mean he's a return. He's probably a net positive as opposed to Geeky. Even if it's just a plus one, literally a plus one on the stat sheet, it's slightly more effective than Geeky had been. Again, I'm cheering for the guy. I predicted, you know, with a friend, 25 goals for him this year, and I'm not liking that prediction too much. So hopefully Girgensons is coming back. I know we've all kind of forgot about him, and I know it's, again, not the fanciest, shiniest name either, but could be around the corner.
Hey, I wouldn't be complaining. The way things are going right now, we can use all the help we can get. Let's get into some of these game recaps because that's been obviously the big topic right now. So overall, the Lightning only with one win on the season. Do have the two overtime losses, but holy cow, this is not where we expected this team to be this early in the season. Let's start off with this first game against the Washington Capitals, which is the second half of a back-to-back after they just played the Boston Bruins. Lightning lose this one by a final score of 3-2 in overtime. And funny enough, I actually think this might have been one of the Lightning's best games, and they still lost it in overtime. Bolts had a 1-0 lead after the first period thanks to Jake Guentzel, but Caps tie it up in the second. They get back in front in the third, but then it's Capitals for the rest of the game. And just frustration, guys, when it comes to the defensive breakdowns that they had late in this game, and they can't get it done in overtime. And that's something they have not been able to do for a while now.
Yeah, the overtime thing still, you know, we talked about, I don't know if we talked about much last season, but the season before for sure, where the team that gets the puck possession ends up dominating play, circling back to the neutral zone. It's so freaking boring. 3-on-3 has turned into such a joke because it's all puck possession. And when you look at the style of play that they do 3-on-3, and then you wonder 5-on-5 why players aren't just shooting, it's because they're trying to maintain puck possession. And just you see it so much more strongly with 3-on-3 because they'll actually exit the zone. I just think it's a horrible product on ice. And, you know, the Lightning had their chance. If it wasn't in this game, maybe it was the second overtime, you know, had their chances. It was in this one where they went back and forth several times. And look, it's a coin flip from getting 2 points versus one. It was a power play goal that allowed the Capitals to tie it. So, yeah, you'd like to get the 2 points, but I mean, they had just beat Boston the night before, so having 3 points in two games, I thought at this point wasn't too bad for the start of this road trip.
Yeah, it looks good in a vacuum. And Jake, you said it was probably one of the best games of the season so far, and the bar is insanely low. It was one of the least bad so far. Again, in that two-game vacuum right there, you're like, okay, you know, you split. You get 3 points in two games. That's pretty good if you do that throughout the course of a season. And then even still getting a point in the Detroit game, it really kind of set a new bar, set a new tone for this team that it's not looking good. And over time, it really is a line change competition. Joe, you're right. The product has not been what it was when it first came out in, 2013, the 3-on-3 overtime. Teams have adapted to it, and it seems like the Lightning really haven't. I think there needs to be some rules amended for it, like a shot clock or like a bigger zone or something like
just
that.
Don't allow them to bring the puck back to their own side of center ice. I think that's the only change. And if you do, it's like a delay a game, or it's a, you know, make some sort of
face off in your own zone, something sure. like that.
Can't change players.
Oh yeah, treat it like an icing. I would be all in favor of that because I was watching this not this game, a different overtime game with a friend, the Kraken Ottawa game, I think it was. And oh, if you think what we saw in this game was bad, the Kraken, they just kept going in and out, in and out, in and out. They probably had possession for like a solid 2.5 minutes. Something needs to give. But enough about the actual overtime. More about the game. This was one that got away again. Being the one of the least bad games of the year so far, the Lightning were in control for a good portion of this game. It was back and forth. It wasn't one team kind of dominating. It wasn't very momentum shifty, or I guess it was, but it was a very fluid hockey game, and it wasn't something that I was just kind of lamenting watching, kind of like we're going to touch on in a few moments. So it's a bummer that this one got away from us. Yeah, you could have played better. Yeah, there were a couple careless penalties. I wasn't a huge fan of the officiating in this game, or maybe that was the Detroit game, but regardless, this one got away from you in a vacuum. It's not that big of a deal, but when you look past this game, it is kind of a big deal.
It's the one that got away, but you know, again, it's the way they were playing. They didn't, and we're saying this is the best game that they played all week. They were not playing good hockey. They should have won this game. It should have never even gotten overtime in the first place, and you continue to see some of the issues that we've seen throughout this whole entire season here. So, yeah, it's great. They got 3 points out of a back-to-back, which, you know, in normal circumstances is great. But they have not looked good in just about any game that they've played. And I think that's where some of the frustration comes in for fans is saying exactly that, is that, listen, he did not play good in this game, and if they played even 50% decent, they should have come away with a win in this game.
And I think that it's really easy to, you know, start to – you can highlight a few players as not playing really well. And in this particular one, Cirelli – basically was at fault for the first goal against, which was that pass from the side of the net out front where Vasi was leaning the other way. It kind of almost looked like a weird play. Like, why is he so open? Why is Vasi leaning? And Cirelli just didn't back check hard enough to pick up the guy that was in the middle. He had the opportunity for it. He was right next to him. He just didn't do it. He kind of spun off of him. And same thing with the overtime goal. It hit his stick and he just kind of bobbled it, and then it went back door, and there's nothing Vasi was able to do from that point. So I'm noticing some really sloppy and lazy play out of Cirelli for a few of these. And, you know, I got some stuff that we can, you know, I'll show a little bit later that visualizes it too.
It's just so frustrating, especially for me. As you guys all know, I'm not a big Washington Capitals fan, so to lose to them after playing so well against them was a tough pill to swallow. But Lightning losing that one, they do get the point, as we mentioned earlier before, and then you have the two-day break before another set of back-to-backs, and the Lightning would take on the Detroit Red Wings in Detroit. And again, in a game where the Lightning just, oh boy, they did not look good. So many little issues. Only 3 goals total in this game. Lightning only get one, and they end up losing in overtime. They were losing this game, guys, for a large majority of it, 1-0, until a late goal from J.J. Moser in the third period. And I say that late goal from the third period. This was a game, by the way, where the Lightning had 6 shots on goal in the first period, 5 in the second, and then 19 in the third. Now, where was that third period team for the first 2 periods? Your guess is as good as mine. Clearly, it was left on the plane. It didn't show up until late. But another game that they did not play good at all and let get away from them against an inferior opponent.
I'll give credit where it's due. Detroit is off to a really hot start. They've beaten some really good teams so far this year. I think they're 5-1 or 6-1, and their record is 5-1 against playoff teams that were in the playoffs last year. So beating good teams, you know, the Lightning are victim to one of that. The third period resurgence, I don't want to put a whole lot of stock into it. Like, yeah, it's something I know that the team is capable of, but obviously it's something that they've shown that they're not really capable of doing this year so far. To me, I kind of attribute that to score effects. You're trailing late in a game, in a game that you're just really not doing anything in. You can't sustain any offensive pressure. You just kind of start flinging everything at the net. And I think they were good at getting the rebounds and fighting for loose pucks in the Detroit zone, but there weren't a whole lot of great chances in that third period until one ended up finally going in. It was a screenshot by J.J. Moser that got the bolts on the board. It was a Detroit player screening his own goalie, but still, you take what you can get. But I really do attribute a lot of those shots and that resurgence to maybe Detroit backed off a little bit, but a little bit of score effects. Just throw everything on net, because they had to be, you know, not embarrassed, but feeling pretty down about themselves. You only have 12 shots through 2 periods. Like, that's just unacceptable. That's kind of like what we saw in the Ottawa game, where you 0 shots on goal, like essentially nothing. And I know, you know, we talked about this last week. We harped on it a little bit in this show so far. Possession. You don't want to give the puck up for nothing. You don't want to take low percentage shots and turn the puck over and just give it away for nothing. But at the same time, you have to throw the puck on net to score a goal. Get a greasy one. Get a greasy one. Get a dirty one. I'm not going to – maybe that J.J. Moser one wasn't greasy, but it wasn't exactly a beautiful goal by any stretch, but he just put the puck on the net and it happened to go in. Crazy.
Yeah, it's not a, you know, don't shoot on goal. You know, like, you definitely have to, you know, put some pucks on net, but I feel that they're not really changing their game too much when they end up having those 19 shots on. Having the 6 and 5 wasn't a matter of choosing not to shoot. It wasn't generating opportunities that were good enough to shoot. They were just being outplayed for a lot of that game. And you can see that by the numbers too. This was the first of 2 that Cooch missed with an illness. They went 0-for-3 on the power play, where their power play has been, you know, pretty decent. In the Capitals game, they were 50%. The Boston game, let me pull it up, it'll just take a moment here. They were at they went 0-for on that one as well. But they've been, you know, pretty decent this season. But without Kucherov there to help quarterback that, you know, they kind of lost some of those opportunities. And then, you know, this was brought up in chat here. The faceoff percentage is continuing to just be abysmal. 44% for the Lightning and 56% for Detroit in this one. And when you don't have the puck, there you go. When you don't have the puck, you can't score goals. And, you know, we kind of saw that in some of the other – I can't remember if it was even the Columbus game that we'll cover here. The faceoff wins are really important. And losing that many – I mean, they do a faceoff summary, like a faceoff comparison, if you go on the NHL website, and it'll show you a breakdown by player. They can show you breakdowns by – period, and they were, let's see, it's too hard to pull up quickly, but they did really poorly in the first in the first half of the game for their draws. It looks like I can't pull the math fast enough because they have it broken down by so many.
But you can visibly see that it's not what it should be, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take advanced stats to see the faceoffs and look at even the basic percentage and say that it's unacceptable. I know 44% doesn't seem crazy or anything, but in the NHL, you know, it is a huge discrepancy that, you know, 44%, it's 56% on the other side. These are defensive zone draws. We saw this in the, in the Capitals game or the Boston game. You lose a crucial defensive faceoff and it ends up turning into a goal. So it's something that
in both those games, the Caps did not score. They just got a chance, but it happened twice.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a very important play. And I hope with Nick Paul returning sometime in November, it might help. I know he's pretty good in the dot, but you're expecting more from Cirelli, who I have down as a pretty good faceoff guy. Yanni Gord as well. I think the loss of Luke Glendening, despite him being buried on the third line, he was a reliable guy. He was a guy you would send out in any situation that you needed the puck. You could argue, I think they did a couple times, throw him out in 3-on-3 overtime to get the puck.
He would line up at the faceoff dot and then win.
Sprint to the bench.
Yep, exactly.
Like, and I'm not saying, you know, we need somebody like that, but this is one tangible issue that we can say is a glaring weakness and has led to goals or at the very least chances against, and it needs to be amended soon.
And Stamkos was really good. Like we had some strong guys at, play in center. And yeah, it's something that's biting now, but then also just, you know, bad play, like the overtime goal. Larkin got a breakaway. Part of that was a really bad read, I think, it was a bad shot by Moser. Shot the puck wide, which rimmed it around and broke it out.
I think it was Hedman. Are you talking about that chance where the defenseman was like pretty close in front of the net? It was kind of a wide open cage.
No, the overtime goal.
So yeah. on that overtime goal against Detroit, it was Hagel, Hedman, and Gensel out on the ice. Gensel shot it wide, and Hagel was up on the play, and then Larkin was behind him at his speed.
Yeah, and that's a – okay, yeah, I see. I'm using the goal visualizer. That's one that you know, if you – I think Hagel needs to realize that even though he's the one that brought the puck into the zone, he ends up being the high player because he just passed it, and, you know – You let the best player for the Red Wings get a breakaway when you just kind of didn't pay full attention to what was going on the ice.
And again, you can kind of say in this one too, this overtime wasn't nearly as bad as the Washington one. I thought there was a lot more flow. I thought the Lightning had some good chances. This one was more of a bit of a breakaway competition, bit of a line change competition, but a little bit more. What do you do? So I can pass the overtime period, but the game itself is still inexcusable. It was agonizing to watch, and it just didn't get better. But I can at least excuse the overtime goal.
Yeah, again, though, a game that, you know, maybe even shouldn't have been into overtime in the first place, and where if they just played better for a full 60 minutes, we had this issue a lot last year where they were not playing a full 60. And listen, I get it. It's hard to play a full 60 minutes all the time, every single game for 82 games. But they have not put together a full 60 minutes once this season. Just so many issues, and it's not just one thing right now. It's not because they didn't have Kucherov, or it's not because the defense was bad. It's all of those things all together where this team just cannot put it together and win games. And, you know, you say, oh, well, it's early, but there comes a point where you're going to dig yourself too big of a hole, and if it comes down late in the stretch, these games matter. They're still important, just as the ones late in the season, and they're starting to dig themselves a pretty big hole to climb out of here. So they have to do something about this now. And unfortunately, it didn't get any better when the Lightning go and face the Columbus Blue Jackets, and again in a back-to-back. So you got Johansson and Vasi going back and forth. Johansson in net for this one. And Johansson actually played pretty good in this game, I thought. He made a couple of big saves. The goaltenders have been maybe the one bright spot, if you want to call it that. But the Lightning do get a lead in this game, 2-1 after the first period. And then Columbus kind of just takes control for the rest of the game. And they end up winning it, getting a goal in the third period to go up 3-2. Lightning make a push at the end, but can't tie it again. Just too little, too late for the Bolts. And now that they have continued to lose games here, they lose all three.
A minute 15 left in the game. I mean, it's just the like give a damn factor, the overall hustle, the ability to close out a game and to, you know, let's just go ahead and snag those 2 points and, you know, outskate them. It's been really tough. And And this was as bad as any of the others. I don't think there's anything else that we can say about this game, to be honest, that we haven't said with the other games. We just didn't get a point out of it. At least they kept it close. But man, on this road trip, Dan actually brought up a point in chat. I don't know that I've ever seen Coop so visibly frustrated as what I've seen him, you know, on the bench these past few games, you know, yelling and obviously, you know, heated. I don't know that he's lost the room. I think it's too early to say something like that, but I don't know what it takes to light a fire under these guys to get them to start to perform either. And this game, again, same thing, 24 total shots on goal. In the first period, it was 6. In the second period, it was 3. And then they started to wake up, but it was one of those too little, too late. 43% in the faceoff. I don't know, man.
Yeah, this was one of the more of the three excruciating games to watch because it's a pretty mediocre team. Columbus hasn't had the hottest of starts either. Another game that you kind of let get away from you. You had the lead at some point, and it's a one-goal lead. Yeah, who cares? But, you know, the vibes quickly turned after Cirelli got that goal. The Ryan McDonagh goal, I'm not going to call it fluky. I think Jed Greaves, the goalie for Columbus, I think he really would have wanted that one back. It was just kind of a smart-ish shot by Ryan McDonagh. But yeah, another one that just got away from you. And the compete factor isn't there. The urgency isn't there. And even, you know, there was a bit of a surge in the third period, but it just wasn't enough. It was a late game winning goal, and there still just was not enough. And I've been trying to avoid saying anything about it just yet, but it's kind of becoming a bit of a glaring issue as well. But Braden Point really just doesn't seem like himself this year, especially with the absence of Kucherov. He just looks listless out there. He's not a Kucherov merchant. Braden Point's been doing this for almost a decade now, and we know what he's capable of. He's a 50-goal scorer, but right now, just this mishmash of whoever's playing on the top line, he hasn't done anything for me to make me say he's even playing half good. Brandon Hagel doesn't really look like himself either. This game specifically, Hagel and Braden Point were just detractors for me. And I hate it. Braden Point's one of my favorite players of all time, favorite athletes of all time. And he needs another gear. The top line is really doing – the top six is doing hardly anything. I don't know where you really slot Cirelli. He's kind of somewhere up and down, but
defensively, which was one of his biggest strengths, I'm not gonna call him a straight out liability, but he's not doing what he was so good at before, which was playing two-way hockey.
Who's Cirelli?
Cirelli. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's putting some goals in that, you know, he's getting into really good the dirty areas of the ice right in front of the crease there and getting some success. But on the opposite side of the puck, he's not performing the way that he needs to, especially for where he's being paid as well. I mean, you can keep going down the list. You know, definitely looks like Hedman has been off of his game. Chernak, yeah. I don't know what is going on with Chernak. I mean, it's just his actual play, I think, has been some of the worst on the team. And again, the team isn't losing because of any one of these players, but they're all slumping at the exact, you know, at the same time. There's not even like a bright spot to help pull them out.
I'm shocked it took you 30 minutes in to mention Chernak. I know that that goal that went off of him wasn't exactly his fault, but yeah, he has not been playing the best either. There's been a lot of times where I've been pulling my hair out saying Eric. So
yeah, and it's, you know, a fluke, a misplay. You know, I got a whole thing on Lilleberg I definitely want to get into after we do these recaps, but yes, sometimes just you get bad puck luck, bad hockey luck. There's a few bad penalties that like Lilleberg took early in the season where he doesn't necessarily get called in a different game. It just so happens that, you know, he got called on a retaliatory penalty where he doesn't necessarily deserve that one because he got slashed first, sort of thing. And with Chernak, if a puck goes off his skate, and I think it actually hit him. Yeah, it hit him in the skate. And what was the other one? There was another one. Maybe it was Crozier in one of the earlier games. What can you do? You can't really blame them. They're in a good position. But there's other stuff that's just been glaring.
Yeah, the one that like bobbled off his skate and what was it in this game where Kent Johnson's goal, he just stuck with the puck. It wasn't a great play by Chernak, but it was also kind of one of those, what do you do?
When you don't know where the puck is, you watch the player. Like, that's his responsibility more than the puck. So mm-hmm. defensemen, if you watch them, they're engaging the player before they try to engage the puck. And then step two is to figure out where the puck is. And yeah, that one was really bad puck luck. But at the same rate, if you start to lose sight of it, rather than get your head down and kind of lose the play, go after the guy's stick. So at least he does a drive-by and doesn't come up with a really pretty goal. But I want to say, I mean, JoJo, I thought, played really well in this game. He just kind of got burnt by the D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he had a couple of sequences, especially one late in the third, just a really outstanding, like it was like two or three saves in a really quick session, and really good saves as well. Not just, you know, making it look good, but really high level saves as well. So I got to give credit to JoJo. He's been, wow, I hate to say it, the best goaltender we've had so far this year. Vazzy didn't play bad in the two games prior, but JoJo has definitely been the better of the two so far.
Nobody's played good, in my opinion. This whole team has just been bad, just straight bad. And you look at just some of these stats that I rattled these off in our chat a while ago when I was really angry at the time of the loss for the Bolts against Columbus. But going into the third period this year, the Lightning had 9 shots on goal going into the third in that game against Washington, 9 shots on goal going into the third against Detroit Red Wings. They only had 13 shots on goal going into the third period in the game against Columbus. Faceoffs, we talked a little about before, 26 for 56, 26 for 39, 27 for 63. That's their last three games. It's about every game has been under 40%. The constant defensive breakdowns that we've seen from every single player, Lilleberg has been maybe one of the worst. Everybody's been really bad, those we've just talked about. They have one game with less than 3 goals against, and that was against Detroit with 2, where they only scored 1 goal. And, you know, all this talk at the beginning of the season, oh, look, we got this new tough guy act, and they can throw a hit. But they are playing some of the worst hockey I have ever seen the Lightning play with all this talent that they have on the roster. And we've seen what this team can do. They've got the talent, and they're not putting it together. And as
you're absolutely right. When you get the tough guy act, though, that's supposed to spark your team to start skating their asses off, and it's not doing that.
Not even close to doing that. And they didn't have that tough guy act before, and I don't think that's the issue. But again, it's just extremely frustrating because, you know, it seems like to me they're almost just trying to. That's the one thing that they are doing this year is. You know, when they're getting frustrated, throwing some punches, getting into a couple of fights, which I don't have a problem with, but it's annoying to see when this team has played this bad and they just don't, like you said, Joe, earlier, they don't have any heart. They don't have any, it doesn't seem like they care. As for the Cooper stuff, you said it, Joe, I think it was, we've seen Cooper be more than animated than he's ever been this year than we've seen him before. I don't think it's a Cooper problem. Listen, Cooper's been the longest tenured coach in the NHL. I give him a much longer leash than anybody else. But clearly something is not right. To be honest with you, I don't know what it is. I wish I could tell you and pinpoint an exact thing. I think it's a lot of things. I do think Cooper's fired the guys up once or twice, but it's been too little too late. Now, is it on Cooper to get on these guys and say, listen, you need to start on time and play a full 60 minutes? Yeah, probably. But again, everything has been bad. Cooper, the players, defense, shots, whatever you want to pin it on, everything has been really bad.
Well, I mean, I think this might be a good time because, I prepared a couple of little videos, if that's all right with you guys.
Yes, absolutely. We love when you do your breakdowns, Jeff.
Sure.
Don't
so, I mean,
what it is?
Yeah. So, you know, we're kind of all in agreement right now that everything that is happening is a team problem, not an individual problem. But I can't help myself, or maybe the algorithm won't let me, when it comes to being on X. And it seems that every other post that is Lightning related is calling for Lilleberg's head. And while I understand that he is not going to be a Norris caliber defenseman, all these people that are basically saying that he's the main problem for the Lightning, I think, aren't looking at the whole game and just looking for a scapegoat. So I have 4 quick examples of some play. I didn't know how to do this live, so I kind of pre-recorded the breakdown of these plays. These are 4 goals against while he is on the ice. And if you just pull up the first one, and we'll let it roll and kind of explain why this play goes down and who's responsible. The first goal against we're going to record is going to show Lilleberg here with Chernak here. Our puck carrier is going to come in, go towards Lilleberg, but pass off to the guy on the boards. That will then see this trailing player move towards the middle of the ice. Sorelli is going to basically be a puck hound. He's first going after the player with the puck, but then he's going to go over to the player along the boards. Just real quick, it's important to kind of understand the setup to see why these plays end up breaking down and who's responsible and why they are dynamic and easy to miss handoffs. What we're going to see is that Lilleberg sticks with his guy, which is going to be 18 here because he crosses towards him. And then Chernak basically has a really bad gap for the eventual goal scorer that comes in here. A case where with better gap, you probably wouldn't see an open lane. So here's the play. Sorelli goes for the new puck carrier, and now Chernak's caught watching. And honestly, Gensel should have gotten into this play. If Gensel gets into this play right now where he's just coasting and puck watching, he can go for a nice stick lift on our eventual goal score. But instead, we have Chernak probably like four strides back here. Ends up being just a giant screen for our goal again. So we'll go ahead and just let it play through. Boom. So in this particular case, I would say this is not a goal that Lilleberg did anything to deserve the negative on. He has his guy completely tied up, unable to get back to the front of the net for a rebound. However, we had a failure between 81 and 59 here to take the guy that ended up being wide open in the slot for the most dangerous scoring area of on the ice. And we can skip the second example. Let's go for example three there, Jake, where in this particular one, it actually is something that Lilleberg does wrong. So you can kind of see the difference. All right, going back a little bit, we can actually see an example of where, yeah, I would say that Lilleberg didn't play this particular scenario well. He's late on the read, so puck carrier's here. Eventual goal scorer is here. Right now, Lilleberg is tied up with his guy at center ice. He's got a good position on his man at center ice. You can see his head, though, looking directly at this puck, and I don't think he actually notices this guy coming in. What's going to end up happening is he's going to get a late step as this play progresses here. Okay. Now we see, I do believe it's Radish. We'll see when it gets clear. One-on-one, tries forcing the guy wide, which is a good job, but he does not do anything to block a pass. And what we'll see is now already this Devils player is calling for the puck, knowing that he's going to get past Lilleberg, who is basically flat-footed at the blue line. He's got a head of speed, and you'll see him be open for a killer tip. Lilleberg is behind the play, and this one just gets perfectly tipped right to the crossbar. I mean, that's one where, yeah, he got completely beat. I got two more examples. We don't have to go through them all because, you know, it kind of illustrates some of the same. But number four, actually, I think is a good example, too, of how he eliminates a guy. If you can pull up number four.
I do not see a number four.
All right, let me put it up here again.
Jane, you do a great job explaining this. I know it's above your pay grade, but if you could do this more, I love when you do this because it really puts I love hearing a very professional, slow breakdown of something that I just kind of go, wow, he sucks.
I hope it's not too boring for people. It kind of seems slower than the guys that do it in the telecast, but it's not something I really do full time. So
color commentary is an art, but this is like, it's a good breakdown if you care more for the, you know, this aspect, the actual deeper, finer points of the game. You're very eloquent in your breakdown.
No, thank you. Another one for from the same game, and this is just unfortunate luck, but it's still going to tally up as a minus for Lilleberg. This time you see him in the slot. He's got his head turned. He's looking to see who's coming in, so he's actually in pretty good position and making a good read on the play. As it progresses, you see him pivot so he can take out the guy in the slot. Shot comes. We see the block in front. And then as this plays, the puck goes behind the net. As of right now, Lilleberg still has this guy completely tied up and isolated. He's taking him out of the play effectively. However, as this puck comes around here, I think it just hits Crozier right in front with just this spinning move. It'll end up coming across, hitting a skate, I believe, and coming into the net. Let's see how this plays. Either way, kind of a funky bounce, and even if it had come out front, though, you see that Lilleberg still had his guy completely tied up. He was doing a good job in this case and still gets the unearned minus one. So if you guys are enjoying, I do have one more that we can throw up.
Yeah, let's go for it. Why not?
Yeah, it'd be all right, Lily 2, and this is from the Red Wings game.
In our next play, we're actually going to see a couple of failures here. First of all, we have our puck carrier coming in with the puck. This is Hagel, who actually takes a penalty, trying to put pressure on this player. I don't like the angle that he takes, and you'll see why in just a second here, but he's going to come to try to hold this blue line. But with there already being a player here, Radish is kind of stuck between either playing number 77 or I think this is number 23 for Detroit. He kind of gets stuck between the two of them because of the angle that Hagel takes. On the backside over here is going to be Lilleberg, where he's going to have to back off just in case it becomes a two-on-one, and it kind of messes up the whole flow, but it starts off with a penalty being taken right on the entry. So right here we'll have the hook. Puck comes across. Now we see that Lilleberg is in a position here where he's basically defending in case they got through clean from Hagel. Now he's got kind of a bad gap between him and the next Red Wing player that's coming into the zone. Not a horrible thing. I would like to have seen his head on a swivel here. You can see he's looking directly at the puck instead of kind of looking to see what his spacing is. It doesn't end up burning him, though, as the play continues. It comes to the guy that I said. You can now see the ref's arm is up. Here we see a lazy play, however, from point. And this is something that I think has been happening all season, where you just get really lazy play. We're going to see this puck carrier take the puck back towards the corner. Lilleberg's going to man on right on him and take him out of the play. But the puck's going to come eventually back to, I believe, is this player that floats backwards. Point never really moves his feet to take additional strides in order to help out with this play. Okay, so he flicks it back this way. Now you'll see Lilleberg eliminate his guy. It's really obvious as of right now, however, that the next play is going to be right back up to this player. And you see Point just kind of watch instead of be aggressive on the play. All right, because he was just watching, now he's a stride behind. And Lilleberg's eliminated his guy on the boards. He's no longer in the play at all. And what transpires next is honestly just bad luck. It's just a puck that shot and goes in.
That was my last one. I mean, that one kind of skipped off the ice in order to go in on, I think that was Vassy right then. And it was, it was a bad luck. But, you know, in these cases, Lilleberg by the numbers looks horrible. Oh, and you see the comments. Oh, let me guess who is on the ice again for a goal against. But, quite a few of these, it's, either not directly his fault or it's really bad puck play around him by some of the other players. And I just hope that these, videos kind of help illustrate where, yeah, the guy might be on the ice, but this is where the plus minus statistic starts to be a little bit unfair. Like Cooch being, what was he, like negative seven or eight.
I think it's nine.
Holy smokes.
Something like that.
Either way, it's still, it doesn't really show you everything that is happening, you know, when those numbers start stacking up. Especially because, like, I remember there was one that Kucherov was on the ice for, and it was one of those face-off losses that was an instant goal. There's nothing you can do as a winger, you know, when it comes to one of those. So, these minus eight, yeah. So, I mean, these plays, when you watch the way they kind of break down, it's interesting to see where some of the handoffs are, but you can also see where some players are lacking. Like, you wouldn't think that it would be Braden Point that pretty much was responsible for letting that guy free.
And I think I'm on both sides of this opinion, Joe. Like, I don't hate him. I don't love him. But I think a lot of people are frustrated with some of the errant penalties that he might be taking. I've seen a lot of those comments, which you're completely justified in thinking that. But I also do appreciate you saying, like, hey, you know, it's not why is he the scapegoat? And I hate to, you know, relapse on the subject, but, you know, there's a lot of Darren Radish bad plays. There's a lot of Victor Hedman bad plays. And I think a lot of people are just still very apprehensive to even point a finger at the captain now. I'm no stranger to it, but there's blame everywhere involved. And another thing in defense of Lilleberg is they've tightened up the defense. He's not going to be the guy that's going to be scoring goals. I don't know why nobody's upset about the people that you can't win games on two goals anymore. It's not, you know, the middle of the 90s. I mean, I guess Detroit kind of did, but it's because we could only put one up. The offense needs to step up as well. Like, if you've got a couple glaring weaknesses, if you've got, you know, a couple detractors in the game, if you've got some bad defensemen or whatever you might want to call them, there's teams that the successful teams can deal with that. Kevin Shattenkirk was not a great defenseman at all. He was good at putting up points, but you had a great offense and a very good rest of the supporting cast that ended up winning the cup. Look at Edmonton. Evan Bouchard, he's a black hole defensively, but they have the offensive weapons to put up and mitigate the damage that he might cause. And right now it's the defense has played, they've played better over this stretch, you know, at least since that Boston game. I'll give them that. The offense hasn't been there. So the people unnecessarily attacking him for his play on the ice, I'm glad that you kind of put that to bed, but I still do think people have reasonable gripes with him.
Oh yeah. I mean, and he's a defensive defenseman. He's hard nosed. He plays very physical. He's going to take more penalties than someone that's been a more of a finesse defenseman like Victor Hedman. Even Ryan McDonagh is usually pretty careful when it comes to taking penalties, because he's just, you know, he's an elite defenseman. You know, could have been a Norris winner. He's a finalist a few times, but Lilleberg's not going to be that guy. But to think that he's the worst of the worst, and we're not seeing our forwards get back and just play a stifling defensive system on the back check. And that's one thing that allows defensemen that aren't quite as good to get exposed, is when they don't have that backside help and support. We saw it, you know, with right there with the Point example, the Sorelli doing it twice in that previous game that we mentioned. We're getting it from all of our top players, so it's there's definitely some big things to address.
There's a lot of problems on this team, and Lilleberg's only one part of that, unfortunately, and it's extremely frustrating. Great job as always, Joe. I don't know about you guys. I know everybody does. They enjoy those breakdowns for sure. The only thing better than a Joe breakdown is heading over to shop.rblrsports.com and using code BOLTS to get 10% off your order. Let's get some positivity back in here. It's been too negative. I'm too sick and tired of talking about the Lightning. But don't forget to check over at our shop, guys. Lightning, Bucks, Rays, Rowdy, Sun, team-inspired merch. We've got it over there for you guys. Links, as always, are in the description. And again, you can use code BOLTS to get 10% off your order. You get a cool t-shirt out of it. Help support the show. We really do appreciate it when you guys are able to go over there and purchase one of those. Let's look ahead here for the Bolts going into this next week. They're in the midst of a long break because the NHL schedule makers decided to be really weird about this these 2 weeks. Lightning are 4 days off right now. Their next game is going to be on Thursday, the 23rd, against the Chicago Blackhawks. By the way, that game at 6:45 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. I have no idea why that game is at 6:45. But Okay.
I think I know. I think that's going to be the one of the frozen frenzy days where they try and stagger the starts.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's my best guess as to why it would be 6:45, because they try and do like 15-minute intervals for the games to, you know, spread out evenly. I think. Don't quote me on it, but that's the only reason I can think of.
Well, then the Lightning will have a game against the Ducks again at Amalie Arena. This is a 3-game homestand coming up for the Bolts. That is on Saturday, the 25th. That game at 5 p.m. Eastern. And then that's the first half of a back-to-back where they will play the Golden Knights on Sunday, October 26th, again at 5 p.m. Eastern. Also, I believe I said Amalie Arena. I'm wrong. It is Benchmark International Arena. Dang it, I'm still doing it. But that's the upcoming schedule here for the Bolts. And I hate to say it, guys, but, you know, right now the Lightning, they need to win every single one of these games. That's not going to happen. It's really hard to do. They've got some tough opponents coming up, but they have got to. Here's what I'll say. Just start playing better. As Cooper always says, right, it's process over outcome. We're not seeing the process. Let's see the process here. And the Lightning are not out of the playoff race. They're not, you know, it's not a blow it up situation. It's not trade all these guys, bench Kucherov or send Kucherov down or get rid of Cooper, whatever. This team has gone through this before. We saw in the year when they went to Sweden. Remember, Sweden was that big trip, and the players really kind of rallied around each other and turned things around. You know, I don't know what it's going to be for the Lightning this year. If it's a closed meeting, or if it's just one good game that gets them going, or what, whatever it is. But the bottom line is they need to get going. They need to get that swagger back because they do not have it right now. And the longer it continues, the worse it's going to get, where they're going to put themselves in trouble later down the road.
Well, these are three teams that are 500 or better, surprisingly for the Blackhawks and for the Ducks. I guess the Ducks, you know, they're right at 500, but you know, they've had some bright spots, and maybe that'll be the bright spot of the week, having Alex Killorn come back, and maybe that'll be something that sparks some nostalgia in some of the players and makes them skate harder against a former teammate. And that's our turnaround point, damn it. That's where it's going to start coming back, when they see Killorn on the ice.
The real momentum shift is going to be a irrelevant Western Conference team. I love it. I'm just kidding. I'm a Ducks truther. They're a good team this year, but my God, we need to get this train back on the rails, or else heads will roll. That is a promise. I don't know what I'm going to do about it. But
it's a good thing we don't do these live right after it ends the games, because
God,
the emotions are very high right now. And again, I know a big part of this for Lightning fans is like, listen, this team's talented. We've seen it. It's very similar to what was last year, and the Lightning were able to make the playoffs and get into the first round consistently. And now all of a sudden they look like one of the worst teams in the NHL. So there is a lot of alarm bells going off right now. Sky is falling. And again, it's one of those things. If you can start to fix it, you don't have to worry about it too much. There's clearly an issue. I know that they know there's an issue. But the longer it continues, the bigger of an issue it becomes. You have to get it corrected as soon as possible. Hopefully, when we're talking to you next week, we're talking about three wins and how the Lightning have really turned this stuff around, and they're looking much, much better. Thank you to everybody that's tuned in with us once again here live. Thank you to everybody that's been commenting in the chat as well. Don't forget, you can hit that the notification bell on YouTube so you get notifications when we do go live. You can follow us on social media at RBR Sports, at RBR Lightning. We'll let you know on there when we're live as well. But with that said, that's going to do it for us in this episode. Thank you, everybody, so much for tuning in once again, and we'll see you next time. Go Bolts. Eureka's here too.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.